Remember the simpler times of the 90s? The bygone days of Beanie Babies, affordable homes, and an endless stream of John Grisham books being turned into blockbusters? Hey, remember Blockbuster? Whether you're looking for a hit of nostalgia, a laugh, or just learning about some of the behind-the-scenes insanity of working in a porn shop the day before Christmas, you have to check out the Talkbuster podcast. An awesome podcast where every episode, Chris Chipman sits down with a guest to talk about the good and the bad of those bygone days. Hello and welcome to Geeks with Shields, your home for all things good and nerdy in this, the darkest timeline. I'm Lord Commander Ulrich, and with me as always is...
his shield brother, Axel Wright.
How's it going this week?
It's fine. How's it going with you?
It is yet another week in the darkest timeline.
Yeah, I guess so. any reason you bring that up specifically?
Not that I'm going to discuss here, but just to say, I'm having a real fun week.
The scenes. Sorry to hear that, brother.
Yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, speaking of things that are what they are, whatever the hell that means, let's talk about the Illustrious Legion, our wonderful, wonderful patrons, people that support the show to keep us here. They are Pam Galley, Marquis, Chris Chipman, River Galley, Krug, Arthur Crane, Kevin Vey, Brandon Enu, John Vinnels, Kit, Kenny, Seth, Decker, Donna Lucy, Carson Mel, Scott Rimmon, Derek Ducati, and Peter Cook. Now, if you like what you do, you want some more, go ahead and join us over on patreon.com/geekswithshields. Not only will you get access to all our episodes early, but if you join us the $5 tier, you get bonus episodes, and best of all, we actually get some of that money back from Patreon.
What?
Anyways, we here at Geeks with Shields have our fingers on the pulse, and we've noticed this newfangled thing called video game movies. I don't know if you've seen them. They're really cool, and some of them actually aren't half bad.
Well, it is funny because it wasn't that long ago when the general conception was that video game adaptations were universally bad, but we've had enough good ones at this point that it's more like, nah.
Maybe we were just, you know, doing it wrong, and the answer was yes.
Yeah, and so there are plenty that are good now, and there are still plenty that are bad. It happens. It's just pretty standard, like any adaptation at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's no... Yeah, for every Last of Us, there is an Uncharted.
Did you see Uncharted?
I did see Uncharted. I thought it was aggressively okay.
Okay. My girlfriend's a huge fan of Tom Holland, but I didn't watch Uncharted, so I
was curious. He's good in it, but it really is an incredibly forgettable movie.
I mean, I was never a fan of Uncharted the series, so I have no connection to it.
There's also that which kind of struck, like, I get why they did it. It's updated Indiana Jones and... Tom Holland's great, but I don't know.
Well, anyway, point is, we're here today because we have been thinking about, you know, video game movies a bit, and we like video games. We like a lot of video games. And so these are just, it's not just supposed to be a conversation of like, what video games do you want to turn into movies? Ulrich and I agreed, like, let's come with a little more than that. Let's come with some ideas of like, maybe who we'd want to direct what properties, and what kind of details we might think about them, and we can talk about that more in detail. But yeah, it's just each one of us came with like three-ish pitches, quote unquote, for a team, quote unquote, to do an adaptation.
Yeah, is that right? And yeah, that's about it. And I mean, I don't know how you went about your process, but mine was I didn't want to do any that are either in production or our obvious like, you know, layups that everyone keeps going, oh, they should make, and it used to be the Fallout movie, and well, that's a series, the Halo movie, and that's a series.
Yeah, so what's funny is I went into it, after we decided to do this, I went into it and thought, instead of going in the direction of what video game do I want adapted, I started thinking about directors I like, and thinking about what video game property I think would work for them, and I started to go in that direction instead. Yeah. And there are a couple that I purposely avoided because of that kind of what you just said. Like, for instance, apparently there's a Street Fighter movie in the process, like, happening right now. And, like, yeah, I want a Street Fighter movie, like, a lot. I want a good one a lot. But again, it's already in progress. I'm not going to bother talking about it. And if one of the three I'm going to talk about is, because like one of my three is one of those ones that Oryk is not specifically one Oryk described, but is one of that concept of like people have wanted this for years, but I'm going to put my little pitch for it.
Oh yeah. So, I got one in here as well that, you know, everyone's like, no, that's a match made in heaven. And the more I dug into it, like, no, this really does need to happen.
But I've got two that I think are going to be a little more of curveballs. So you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first, and I will start with my easiest, best, most simple pitch, which is a Doom movie directed by Gendry Tartakovsky.
Okay, so my first question, is Gendry Tartakovsky done anything live?
No, this isn't live. This is his choice.
Oh, you just want his style. Okay. Just make sure I understand what you're... But then that's the pitch, is that Doom a la Primal.
A la Primal, a la Samurai Jack, a la whatever specific style he feels best works for Doom. Because, listen, Doom Guy's not going to talk, and if anyone knows how to convey story through nonverbal cues, it's Gendry Tartakovsky.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, it's really funny because, don't get me wrong, I'd love to see a good live-action Doom, especially after we're in a post-Hardcore Henry world. But the hook of Gendry Tartakovsky's Doom is appealing. I understand what you're going for there, yeah.
Yeah, like, and listen, we'd have the Doom song in there somewhere, but this is where it would really come down to who the composer is, and I wish I knew more composers.
Have you played Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal, though?
I have.
All right, I'm just saying, there's a lot more than just the Doom song. Like, Doom Eternal specifically has such a cool
soundtrack. I wasn't saying that it isn't good music. I'm saying that's going to be in the movie, obviously, but this is kind of like, it's going to be the perfect marriage of the animation and the music, and you need someone that really knows how to compose the music to make it work.
You have anyone in mind?
No, the thing is, I don't know composers. That's like,
Well, let's see.
Like, John Williams, cool. Hans Zimmer, cool. Neither of them are going to fit here.
That's true. Well, then what kind of movie do you... Well, if you don't know the name of a composer, which is fine because I don't know that many composers either beyond the two you mentioned, what are some other films whose scores come to mind?
Fury Road immediately jumps to mind for this.
Fury Road.
Because it's operating in that same space. We have in this one, we have a nonverbal protagonist and so much is conveyed through tone, lighting, music.
Okay, for the record, the composer... Fury Road is a guy named Junkie XL, who's a Dutch composer whose real name is Tom Hulkenborg.
I know Junkie XL, but I wish I knew where it was other than Mad Max.
He also has done trance productions. He's big in producing electronica and big beat music.
That feels like a fit for this movie.
Other movies he has composed the scores for include Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice and... Divergent, Deadpool, Tomb Raider, Alita Battle Angel, Terminator Dark Fate, Sonic the Hedgehog, Scoob, Godzilla vs. Kong, Army of the Dead, and 3,000 Years of Longing. That is an up and down...
That is a very eclectic credit.
Yeah, I admit to most of that, the music doesn't stand out to me of those, and admittedly, because it looks like he did quite a few of the Snyder stuff, and those soundtracks are terrible. So
the Wonder Woman theme is great.
Yeah, but I don't see that one listed here among what he did.
Well, that one starts in Batman v Superman, I think.
He did compose the score for Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, yes.
So that would be the Wonder Woman theme. Yeah, but no, this is one, and I ulterior motives. I want adult animation in the West to be taken seriously outside of, oh, look, it looks like anime, therefore that makes it adult, you know?
Sure.
Because we've talked about this a lot, and we will talk about it again. Animation is in a really weird place here in the West, especially in terms of what is adult animation.
I would say it's a bit of an unfair statement, because animation itself, the medium of animation, is actually in something of a very experimental golden age. That doesn't mean that... Age.
We're very experimental. We are still ripping the fuck off of, oh, look, people like anime, make it look like anime.
I'm saying that there's actually a lot of non-anime looking stuff that's being come out and existing. But whether the audience is necessary there for it all the time is a different story.
Yes.
That's why I'm saying, like, I think animation is doing fucking gangbusters right now. It's just that it's still not necessarily reaching the mass audience all the time.
Yeah, and that's why, again, I say Gendry Tartakovsky, primal style or primal-like in that, and Doom.
Well, you don't want Doom a la Hotel Transylvania? That's not what you want?
No, and listen, I don't hold that against him because he took those paychecks to go and make Primal, and then he took Primal's paychecks to go make Unicorn Warriors Eternal, which is, he's finally getting to make his Popeye movie, his Popeye TV show.
I feel like I've seen some animation that really is in my head for like what you're talking about, what you're envisioning, but I can't think of what it's from. Like, I have this strong image in my head of like stills of very contrasted reds and blacks as demons are being slaughtered, but
that's what I mean. I mean, this would be a great hook movie because it would be Doom and everyone would be like, yeah, Doom, and go and see it. And then because it's Gendry Tartakovsky, it's going to be a work of art and they're going to go, holy shit. Like, it will be, you'll be able to talk about it. It'll cross the spectrum. You know what I'm saying?
You know, like, I really should have thought about like good animation kind of stuff, because I, now that I'm thinking about it, I would love if the Miller and whatever the guy is behind Spider-Verse.
Lord Miller.
Thank you. I can imagine some properties for that. We'll come back and do another episode of this at some point.
Yeah, because that's like the other thing. The big kind of looming problem that has hung over video game movies for a while is they don't always work in the medium they're trying to be forced into. Live action isn't always video games friends because video games are already kind of animated. And then by trying to make it real life, it's like, eh, turns out that it doesn't look as good.
I feel like I've been saying this a lot lately, whether I'm recording or not, but I do feel like every story can be adapted into any medium. But in order to do it, you know, sometimes you have to take certain steps. So I will say that I think a lot of, basically any of the best video games can be adapted into a movie. Whether or not that movie will be very recognizable as the same thing is a different question entirely.
to paraphrase the great late George Carlin, anything can be funny. Problem is, most people aren't funny. Same goes here. Anything can be translated, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to turn out well. I mean, I still maintain half of Borderlands' appeal when it first launched was that weird, unique art style.
Yeah, the cell shading it basically keeps throughout its run. But anyway, so, okay, Tarkovsky's Doom. Any other people you want to attach to it before we move on?
No, because I'm trying to think, like, well, who are the iconic characters? Like, we don't really need iconic characters. It's Doom guy. I really
If you've got Tarkovsky behind it doing a primal style, you could have basically no, the only dialogue in the whole movie would be like ancillary, would be things in the background, would be audio logs playing that Doomslayer doesn't even care about. And that would be very in keeping with how Tarkovsky does his stuff.
And it would be a fascinating Oscars conversation because they wouldn't nominate it because it's violent and it's a video game and it's crass. Mm-hmm. But they'd also be like, yeah, but it looks fucking gorgeous. Because I mean, Primal did win a bunch of Emmys. So maybe there is hope.
Okay, well then I'll actually start with the third thing on my list because it's thematically similar. I, for the record, I chose three things that I think will work in live action, but for different reasons. I want a Diablo movie. See, now,
I thought about this.
Now, specifically, and for each of my cases, I chose two directors for different reasons. In this case, I would either want Denis Villeneuve, I cannot pronounce his fucking name.
He's French. No way. Yeah.
The guy who just directed Dune and Dune Part 2, as well as a bunch of other stuff. Or Robert Eggers, the guy. And sources that I'm pulling from are literally Dune and The Northman, but also Mandy. Not necessarily that director, but when I talk about like what inspirations I want for this movie, Mandy, Dune, and The Northman. Those are the three I'm looking at.
Very style. It would fit, because Diablo would have to be very stylistic and really lean into it.
Yes. Now, key thing, we're focusing on Diablo 1, just Diablo 1 story. I'm of the opinion that Diablo 2 is one of the greatest video games ever and definitely outshines Diablo 1 in a lot of ways. But for a movie, Diablo 1 is a lot more focused. For any of those out there who didn't actually play Diablo 1, because that's actually true for a lot of people that started in Diablo 2 or even Diablo 3, Diablo 1 story is very small. It's three people who are, for different reasons, come to the town of Tristram, where crazy shit is happening, crazy demonic shit, to find out, like, hey, there's a whole set of like dungeons that go on for an unknown amount of time underneath the cathedral, and we think all the evil shit's coming out of there. So can you adventurers go figure that out? Along the way, they fight a skeleton king and talk with Deckard Cain, and eventually you find, oh, hey, the prince of the whole kingdom, who's basically got kidnapped, is possessed by the literal devil named Diablo. Go kill him. That basic story, I would turn into a highly focused character piece. You get three actors. I don't know which one specifically, but I'm not too interested in overarching themes or plots, although there is a behind the like scenes or like a kind of overarching theme about power and greed's relationship to insanity, because this is a movie about insanity. So I want three character or three actors. The movie's entirely about their performances and about their interactions with each other as they're traveling through these dungeons, this underground thing. We spend a lot of time with them interacting with each other. Every now and then we get a violent sequence of them fighting something demonic. They espouse how they came to this location, this place, their background. We get maybe just a flashback for each one explaining, and each one deals with a different method of madness, perhaps a different reason why someone might go insane to tie into overall themes. But this is, I mean, I literally call the hook gothic action horror with not Gandalf, not Aragorn, and not Lady Legolas.
I mean, this feels like you could pitch it to Eggers if you'd like, hey, it's a fantasy movie about these people that go insane fighting demons.
That's why I listed Eggers. I like Denis Villeneuve as well for how he particularly does his visualizations of adapted material, and how he's really good at these like long kind of shots. And I want like long, ominous, like this is not a horror movie, but this is horror adjacent. Like,
yeah, that's why, again, at Eggers, because as much as I don't like it, he has roots in horror with The Witch.
Yeah, that's why I think Eggers is probably better, but again, I wanted two options for each one. But yeah. When I think about the Lighthouse, I'm like, yeah, the man who made The Lighthouse, I think, could make a Diablo movie. Oh, and of course, the important thing for me in this film, the final confrontation of Diablo, yeah, it'll have some action, but that's not really important. Diablo in the Diablo universe is the Lord of Terror, and I want to lean into that. I want a third act that's all about psychology, where Diablo is fucking with their minds, and they had to deal with that in order to defeat him, not just swords and magic and shit.
Yeah, no, you really are leaning Eggers for this one, because basically you're describing, what if we cranked the knob a little bit more on the Northmen and we had a bigger effects budget?
Yeah, exactly. But also, not necessarily a bigger effects budget, because a key thing, this movie takes place entirely underground in a cathedral dungeon. So we can actually do a lot of the tricks for hiding things, but it makes sense in the context of what we're doing, like a horror movie. Like, it's all darkness and shit, but that we lean into the atmosphere of that.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. And it would be divorced enough from the game that it's not like, okay, you need to know the lore of Diablo. No, the pitch is like, hey, if you know Diablo, you'll enjoy this. But also, if you want to enjoy this kind of trippy, grim sci-fi.
Yeah, because everybody watching knows what the devil is and knows that Diablo is just the devil in Spanish. So they're like, what little lore implications they need to know about, which are like who Deckard Cain is, and that Diablo's title is the Lord of Terror, you can do in offhanded things. Other than that, you don't need to know any Diablo lore for Diablo 1's story to work in a movie.
Basically, Diablo 2's where all the lore comes. We're not repeating the World of Warcraft mistake.
Yeah, no. In fact, like, at best, before they go into the dungeon, they have, like, a couple scenes with Deckard Cain, where he, like, tells them what he thinks they might be going into. No longer than about 5 minutes, at most. And then we basically never see him until maybe the very end of the movie. Like, the movie isn't about the lore. It's about these three people's journey into the metaphor for their own minds and their own trauma.
Do you have any casting in mind?
No, honestly, I don't. In my brain, my first thought was I just want Jake Gyllenhaal probably as the lead, because I know he's my favorite actor. But, and I know he can do this kind of like, what is going on in that person's mind. And I think he would make a really good Aiden, who is the person who eventually, quote unquote, defeats Diablo and becomes possessed by Diablo in the context of Diablo 2. And I would probably, if I was going for a rogue, I would choose Anna Taylor-Joy. But that's just because I think she's really good at being very mysterious. And she's already worked with Robert Eggers in a very good role.
Yep.
And as for the sorcerer, I don't know. I honestly don't have a good... Maybe Michael B. Jordan, just because he's really fucking good actor, and I would like to see him in more stuff in general.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan would be good. We can piss off all the deep lore nerds. Like, there can't be black people in a fantasy setting.
Well, it's funny, because I'm pretty sure the sorcerer was canonically black in Diablo.
I know, but you know that you can't, anytime there's a fantasy setting, there's a certain subset of nerd that pops up going, excuse me, there's no Africa in this fantasy world. There's no Europe in this fantasy world. What's your point?
Yeah, and... hey, you want to switch around? I could also see Michael B. Jordan taking on Aiden and like easily because he's got super good star quality and Gyllenhaal's a really good character actor too, so you can have him be the sorcerer. I'd be fine with that either way or swap it around. The point is, it's interchangeable, but literally to me, the key is get a director who has an eye for atmosphere and like metaphors of insanity and get three actors who are really good for performance. I know that's you always want actually good performance, but I mean, this is going to be a performance movie first. Yeah. I want three solid performances. That's more important to me than story cohesion or like any of the other, like I need three solid actors or the movie doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I want this movie now.
Yeah. That's my pitch for a Diablo movie anyway.
Yeah, no, I thought about this and it's like, but I don't know Diablo well enough to pitch it for like a Diablo movie would work.
And I know that there are fans out there who might be hearing me say that, be like, well, what about set up for a sequel? No, I don't get me wrong. Again, Diablo 2 is superior to Diablo 1 in like every way. But I don't think Diablo 2 actually translates to a movie. If we were going to adapt Diablo 2, I'd probably go the animated route and have it not be connected at all. When it comes to a live action movie, though, Diablo 1 is perfect. It's already set up.
Yeah. Damn, I want that movie now. Someone make us rich so we can start producing these things.
Okay, what's your next one?
All right, mine is an easy ringer. Everyone has said it. I said it just because, like, it's in my mind. But then I started thinking about it, like, oh no, this actually is the marriage that needs to happen. And that's Dead Space and John Carpenter.
Is John Carpenter still working a lot?
Not so. He composes. He's still a big composer.
That's right. I remember he composed, like, a adaptation of his own... or a reboot of his own work or something a few years ago, didn't he? What was it? Yeah,
and he does. He's really big in music because unfortunately he's losing his eyesight pretty bad. He's got a chronic degenerative retina disease.
All right, so we're going to call this more like an ideal. Like if we can get John Carpenter to do this and be healthy while doing it.
I think he could do it. I think he would 100% get him back to direct because he's a gamer. That's like he loves two things. He loves smoking weed and he loves playing video games.
Okay, and so... it's been a few years since Dead Space 3 basically killed the franchise. So if you are listening and you're not familiar with it, it was a late 2010s kind of franchise where you're this armored figure in space.
You're a space engineer on a possessed mine of demons.
Yeah, it's very Event Horizon.
Yeah.
Little bit of Halo, but not nearly as action heavy, more about the horror element. You're very slow, you're very methodical. It's got a little bit of that Resident Evil kind of vibe, but in space.
Yep. No, this recently kind of popped back in my head because they did that remaster of it, which came out really fucking well.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, I'm like, oh, that's right. John Carpenter himself has said he'd love to do a Dead Space movie and watch it. Like, yeah, no, this would work for John Carpenter. I can totally see this. But I'm making it a prequel because one of my problems with video game adaptations is when they just tell me the story from the game over again.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the story for Dead Space is good. I think the events leading up to it are more interesting for movie way version.
Okay.
But basically, the whole setup condensed version is in the future. Earth used up all our resources and now we mine other planets for their resources, literally destroying them. And one day we found this weird magic rock that makes people go crazy and resurrects the dead as weird monsters. And of course, a church sprung up around them. So there's the church of people that worship the magic rock, believing it is the big savior and that, you know, they need to do something with the crazy magic rock, who are thinly veiled Scientologists in a lot of ways. Well, thinly veiled Scientologists, thinly veiled religious people, because they're very apocryphal.
And John Carpenter has experience with taking very strong, prevalent societal norms and spearing them as science fiction. If you've seen They Live, this is the entirety of that movie.
Yep. And so it's a war between this religious order and corporate Earth, who's like, we need to crack more planets and we can't have these religious nut jobs fucking it up. Anyways, the prequel events that lead to the events of Dead Space 1 is there's a mining world where they come across and they discover one of these weird rocks that, you know, drives people crazy, makes them paranoid, makes them insane, makes them violent, and then eventually resurrects them as horrible monsters. And who should so happen to be in charge of this planet but one of the space crazies? So think this is basically in the same vein as The Thing, because there are all these people that worship this rock that are embedded in the cult, but you don't know who's involved. And the artifact slowly driving people crazy, slowly making them more paranoid. We're really ramping that up until, of course, we're getting to the end of, and now the monsters are showing up from the bodies they sacrificed to appease their space rock god. I mean, tell me this doesn't drip carpet.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
He gets to do the thing. He gets to do a social commentary on capitalism versus religion and where the two butt heads and fuck everyone in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pitch John Carpenter, it's almost always got to have some sort of, like, deeper story. It's funny, because I'm of the opinion that not all movies, by any necessity, need to have a deeper meaning or story. Some movies know what they are, and that is just a fun time. But I feel like Carpenter, you expect something. Like, you're going to have a good time, and you're going to have a visual feast, but you're expecting something. It's saying something.
Yeah, and it's a great slow descent horror movie. Because we have that great first act of introducing our characters, everything's fine, to the discovery of the magic space rock, and the kind of cues, I'm like, huh, people sure are acting weird around this thing. We should, you know, let them know. To then the cult gains power and gets more going and starts doing crazy shit. And then, of course, the question being, who can I trust because this makes everyone paranoid? Am I becoming paranoid? Oh, God, there's a space, crazy space monster.
Wait. So I feel like you've done a lot of explanation of setting. What's the plot necessarily? You mentioned the cult and the rock and stuff, but do we have, like, are we following one person?
Yes, there is one character who was an engineer working on the planet, and, you know, she'll be our main follow through because the whole first Dead Space game kicks off as she sent out an emergency beacon at the end to her boyfriend, Isaac Clarke, like, hey, shit's gone sideways here. Come bring rescues. And of course, the great thing about that is, of course, we have this, like, oh, we'll think she'll get out. We think she'll get the message. She doesn't make it out. She doesn't get the message out. But the message gets out, and we end with, and here comes the next batch of heroes here to save the day, thinking everything's fine and grand and dandy. And cues right into the first Dead Space game, which, if you wanted to do a Dead Space sequel, do the first game. If not, everyone goes, plays the game. They know what happens when this intrepid crew of space engineers shows up for a rescue resupply.
What do we call the film? Because I feel like in that case, we wouldn't actually want to call it Dead Space. We want to call it something that is Dead Space adjacent, but so that a sequel can be called Dead Space.
See, that's tricky because the obvious choice, and they have done it when they did, like, the various animated Dead Space movies, it was Dead Space and then subtitle, undertitle.
Yeah, but I feel like I don't want to do that. That is just me. I feel like we'd be able to call it. I will admit, this doesn't happen, I think, nearly enough. I love movies that are sneak adaptations. Now, this really wouldn't be that. You'd figure it out pretty quick from trailer footage and whatnot. But I love movies that are usually, like, if you didn't watch the trailers, you're in the seat, you saw the title of the movie, the poster, and then you realize it's an adaptation of something. That it happened with one of my favorite movies is Underwater. It kind of happened with it. It'll happen with Mother to a degree. So
yeah, no, I love shit. Running through my head, I'm like, what are names and titles from that universe you could use? The creatures are called necromorphs because they morph dead flesh. The cult, I think it's called, I think the cult's like the Unitarians or some shit.
Would be really funny if you just called it Dead Space, but in Latin. And then, like, that was the name of
what is Dead Space in Latin? Let's find out.
Necro something, probably.
Yeah, it's going to be Necro something.
But then by the end of the film, or even by the middle, they just, like, you know, wipe their hand over something that, like, says Necro.
It'll be Mortis Spatum.
Necromortis Spatum. Okay, Mortis Spatum. But they just, like, wipe, and then it, like, translates into Dead Space or something. But anyway, that's just me thinking of, like, a little stinger, you know?
No, I know. You name it after whatever the fucking the mining rig planet was. Which I don't remember off the top of my head, but the fact that there hasn't been, like, there's an alien movie waiting to happen. This is called Nostromo.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. But I feel like coming back to the beginning, it is, we're taking Event Horizon and throwing the thing at it, which is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. No, again, this one, and again, if not John Carpenter, I'm trying to think who in horror right now is working with that same, that has that same love.
Same kind of material.
Yeah. Oh, why can't I think of anybody? Because I've got a
couple. I don't know. I can think of a few horror directors, but not ones that I think would necessarily be in that vein.
Leigh Whannell could probably knock this out of the park.
Remind me what Leigh Whannell's done.
Leigh Whannell did Upgrade and The Invisible Man and...
Oh, okay. I'm sold. You got me... Yeah, both those. Okay.
Yeah, like he's got the, like, Upgrade really does have the good twist we want. Because we want you to have hope throughout the movie that our main characters are going to make it off and not be converted into horrible abominations.
Hmm. Okay. So we started off with a action with a horrible, you know, hellish thing. Then we went to my hellish action and horror adjacent, like, middle. Then we went to more straight horror. We're going to continue that. Like, it's funny because my third movie isn't that at all, but I guess I'm going to talk about the next movie. Unless you have anything else to say about Dead Space.
No, like the only thing I really can pitch that would be cool, would be fun, would be interesting is I think one of the best parts of the Dead Space game is when you shoot the enemies, you can shoot limbs off and they will keep coming at you, which means we're really going to get to do that fucked up squiggle in our brain of when something doesn't move like a human should, that immediately fucks with your brain. This movie would be packed with that kind of shit, like blowing off limbs and they're still scuttling at you. That's the trailer shot. It's just something coming out of the dark scurrying at you.
Okay, so there are a lot of reasons why you might want to adapt a game into a movie, not just to make money, but, you know, that is a reason. But one of them, I think, because I agree with Ulrich in general that sometimes it can be frustrating if a movie is just telling the exact same story because we've played the games. I do feel like there are lots of people who will not play the games, period, for a number of reasons. And I think some stories are so good that if you're turning them into a passive medium is the only way to get an audience of some size to pay attention to it, that I think that's worthwhile in and of itself in some cases. Example, a movie that I know a lot of people have wanted to exist for a long time, and I'll pitch now, is BioShock. Ooh. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, I don't know why anyone listening to this probably wouldn't know, but BioShock is a game, it was, I think, originally PlayStation 3, that is about a man who he is in a plane crash over the ocean. And in the wreckage, he sees a lighthouse, and it's in the middle of the ocean. And he swims to the lighthouse, only for it to be a elevator to a city that exists at the bottom of the ocean called Rapture. Now, visually, already, that's great, especially as a setting for essentially a horror game. But as he enters it, something is wrong. There are things seem to not be working. It's all also Art Deco, like 1930s, 40s Art Deco. Think like Batman the Animated Series kind of looking.
Or Batman 1989. Or
sure. And it turns out that this city was made by a man who's basically Ayn Rand, who's straight up to the point where his name is Andrew Ryan, which is on purpose.
Subtle.
And yeah, and it's all about what happens if you have a city that is completely divorced from the concept of restraint at all. It's also divorced from concepts like religion, but they find basically a different religion, which is part of what is happening at the... Anyway, I'm not going to go into the deep story of BioShock. It actually is very good and worth your time. But if you were listening and you're the kind of person, for instance, who doesn't play games, or doesn't like the idea of how dare they hide story behind a test, essentially, of skill, which is how some people view video games. Well, I'd want BioShock to be directed by either George Miller or Sam Raimi. I lean towards Sam Raimi, but...
Oh, Sam Raimi. I want Sam Raimi. I had pondered this one, and I almost pitched it with Guillermo del Toro, because aesthetically, that's the dream team lead, but I don't think this is del Toro's story.
Yeah, I think Sam Raimi and George Miller could both deliver it, but in different ways. Basically, because this is a story, as far as like overall, this is a basic story of a man trying to escape. This is an escape story. So literally, the sources I want to pull from are Fury Road, Underwater, Evil Dead 2, Alice in Wonderland, I'll explain, and Escape from New York, especially Escape from New York. But I also wonder, because part of the appeal of a movie like this is literally a character being thrust into a situation that, and into a place that they have never conceived, and being bombarded with crazy shit as they try to find their way out. That's the fundamental basis of what BioShock is. Now
I see your Alice in Wonderland comparison.
Yeah. I would even call the hook, if I were trying to deliver, trying to pitch this to an investor, this is 28 days later at the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And there's an additional layer where there's two warring factions, one run by a character named Atlas, one run by a character named Andrew Ryan, and our main character, Jack, but we probably don't want to change his name for the concept of the movie. He's a silent protagonist in the game. We don't have to have that in the movie. We can figure out a personality for him later. But point is, he's still... All he wants is to get out and get home. And he is stuck in this situation where there's this crazy city that he can't just leave because it's bottom of the ocean, and there's a literal war going on. And also we've got people who are, you know, we got a drug metaphor going on because people have been modifying their DNA. Now, we're not going to lean hard into the powers that are in BioShock, probably just like two of them, and really save them for the end. I would imagine the most iconic ones being shooting lightning out of your hands and maybe summoning bees, because that's horrifying.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But there's a Folly of Man story happening, like theme-wise, because we hear more about the background going on here. But yeah, I would say lean hard on the plot of something like Escape from New York, while leaning hard on the visuals and action kind of things of Underwater and Fury Road. Now, Sam Raimi would specifically be perfect because of how BioShock conducts it, like creatures, which are people who have been spliced, who they're basically deadites, the way they move and talk and try to scare. But again, I could go either way because the idea of like how Mad Max has to escape his situations in Fury Road feels like what I would kind of want Jack to be doing in a lot of the areas of Rapture. Again, I can go either way. Now, this story should be very compressible. Like, BioShock as a game, I think, has a 20-hour campaign, something like that, maybe even less. And a lot of that is, you know, exploring, fighting, doing shit in your menus. I think we should be able to compress this game's story very easily. Ignore the moral choice aspect of BioShock. We don't need that now. Just Jack's a good person. And have like maybe one fight with a big daddy. Again, we don't want to go too hard in any one thing.
Yeah, no, the idea is it's a dude trying to escape and it keeps going from bad to worse.
Exactly. And I admit I don't have necessarily a good solution to the ending. BioShock 1 has a rather famously not as good as the rest of the game ending. I would try to figure out a good way to rewrite it, but I don't have that right now. And to answer the elephant in the room, if it worked, maybe could do BioShock Infinite, but that's a fundamentally different film. BioShock 1 is basically an action thriller that's a horror action thriller. That's what I meant to say, horror action thriller. BioShock Infinite, I would cut down a lot of the action and make it much more of a philosophizing kind of movie, and I don't have a good director or pitch for that right now. That's basically almost a different franchise.
Yeah, no. And I like the idea, like, the city's called Rapture. Was that the name of the... Yeah, there's your title.
Oh, Rapture. Sure. Love it.
Yeah, you don't... BioShock's going to confuse people. Rapture, that's going to... Well, that might confuse, but I like it as a title.
Well, it's also... It's great imagery, and your teaser trailer would be, like, probably the elevator that you think's going to go up, but starts going down, mm-hmm. and then you start seeing the water. That'd be your teaser. It's just that.
Yeah.
And any BioShock fan would instantly know what's going on, but to the rest of people, they'd be like, what Rapture, but the what I don't, and that's interesting. I think that'd be a good teaser. But
yeah, I'm running through my brain like other directors.
This was another example of like I literally thought Sam Raimi was one of my favorite directors. What video game would I want him to do?
Yeah, and the only problem I have, like, I love Sam Raimi. I'm trying to remember like the last how much tongue in cheek do you want? Because if it's Raimi, you're gonna get a bit of tongue in cheek.
I want.
Then again, he did
the Grudge a character
Dead series, so
yeah. But there's also a character whose name escapes me, who's an artist in BioShock, whose whole thing is like grotesque art, but over camp. Like he's basically a ridiculous performance artist who is using bodies, and he's exactly the kind of character I imagine Raimi creating.
Oh, what about Jordan Peele?
I would have no problems if I heard Jordan Peele doing that. I think he could do it a lot. I think he would.
Like, Jordan Peele is going to be there for the ideas. Like,
I feel like Jordan Peele could hone in on the classist ideas. There's a lot of ideas at BioShock.
And that's the other thing I'm thinking, like, that's a lot of pins in the air.
Yeah. Now, I would say that I would shift the focus a bit if Peele was doing it to more about the concept of, like, the regular people who were affected by what was going on in Rapture and how the upper class basically dicked over fucking everyone in Rapture despite Andrew Ryan's promises. And I feel like Peele could do a lot with that. But that'd be good.
Now, this is the first one on the list I've kind of looked at. Like, this could also work as a TV show.
I would.
Maybe a limited series.
I think Infinite would actually work better as a series. But that's because Infinite has crazy alternate universe portal stuff happening. Yeah. I think the first one, Rapture, is better as a contained escape narrative that has like interesting ideas at the seams that you kind of have to.
This is true, which again kind of makes me go back to Peele because Peele might be able to pack it all. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other directors. I feel bad because we pitched this and I'm blanking on all the good directors that I know. I have directors. I can name directors. I can't think of them right now because my brain's fucking Three Stooges syndrome.
That's fine. Anyway, that's the conclusion of my pitch for BioShock. What's your third pitch?
All right, my last one is very us. I don't know how many people are going to remember this game, but we love to talk about it. And that is the first Resistance Fall of Man.
Which, when Ulrich mentioned that we were going to do this recording, I knew he was going to do Resistance. So I almost started thinking about it myself, then I was like, wait, I'm not going to overlap with him. He's definitely going to do Resistance.
Because I still love this game all these years later. It is such a shame that PlayStation hasn't re-released it in some form.
I certainly love my memories with it. It's basically the first game Ulrich and I played through together. Like, we played that entire game together. Yep. And we made a lot of in-jokes about it. And it's a really solid first-person shooter with a novel, if at this point kind of old-seeming concept, which is it's World War II, but there's aliens.
Yeah, and that's why I decided I'm not going to adapt the game. The setting of World War II is, hey, these weird creatures are attacking Europe in this post-World War II, but maybe there never was a World War II, and they're attacking England, and it's up to the Americans to save the day, and we follow the journeys of one Nathan Hale, a guy that was infected by the aliens, so he's got all the powers of the aliens, but slowly thinking, yeah, it's a great game. Go play it. But listen, this is an obscure enough game. I want to do, let's tell a new story.
Okay,
the story I'm going with is, given what little we knew during the first game, real quick sideline, the longer the story of these games went on, the less I liked them. The games were still fun. The story went in weird directions. I'm like, I'm not here for this. We're going to ignore that for now. Because the whole invasion of the Chimera, which is what these creatures call, started in Russia. And the reason no one found out about it was because it was kind of implied to still be Soviet Russia, so they were very tight-lipped about what's going on.
Yeah, they were trying to deal with it on their own.
Yeah. So we can even just have the teaser trailer be set in the Siberian plains, a crunch, a roar, a brief glimpse of the creatures, and that's it. And then the movie, in my mind, is, I don't know if anyone but me saw Overlord,
but it's love in Overlord.
Yeah. Same vein. That one, basically think the other movie I should have made, Wolfenstein, the movie, less tech, more zombies.
Yeah. That's basically what Overlord was already.
Yeah. But basically think that we're going to go in that same kind of war movie vein. about these Russian soldiers fighting to stop these weird creatures. We get to do really fun creature designs. We can do it kind of small scale, last bastion outpost holding back. And the coolest thing about Resistance, guns aside, was the creatures really, there's a bunch of them. They all looked unique. They had kind of this deep sea creature feel to them, like anglerfish. Too many eyes and teeth. And that, to me, that's right there. That's great horror fodder.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the idea of this Last Stand Outpost 19 style movie. It's like, huh, I wonder if these guys are going to be successful and hold back these terrible creatures. And of course, no, they're not. It's going to be one of those movies. You're going to get real attached to these small group of characters that one by one they die. And then the movie ends with we'd have to establish something that, visual shorthand for the Chimera coming, because then we could do it over like the Eiffel Tower or the Brandenburg Gates, like show like they broke free from Russia and they kept going.
I would use Berlin.
Yeah. I just like, the problem is Berlin does not have the same instantly recognizable landmarks.
That's true. But I feel like you could probably find something that an audience would recognize. Like maybe a Berlin Wall, but all the writing on it.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you get the pitch what I'm going for here, right? It's kind of a war movie. It's kind of a horror movie. It's a great. I love a siege movie. I really
funny
do.
How everything we've pitched so far is, if not horror, horror adjacent. I think it's really interesting.
Which is really funny because you're not a horror guy.
Not generally, but I do appreciate a certain level of it. I just am usually not in a lot of horror movies, but the stuff I am into, I have my reasons for.
Yeah. And again, this one, Siege, Last Man Standing, we get to do all sorts of cool feature designs, small cast. Cause again, this is, we're not at the point the war has been going on for a while. We've adapted their weapons. This is shortly after whatever the previous events were, doing their best to hold on. We can get the political filler with the commissariat going, yeah, there are no monsters out there shooting people.
An important bit, never in this film you find out what the Chimera are or where they came from. You don't.
Oh, we can do the infection thing, because one of the things they do is they launch these beetles that infect people and they slowly turn them. So we get a paranoia.
You've got to have a sequence with like a underground disabled train station and those big fucking dog rhino things. Cause that was the scariest part of the game.
No. Oh fuck. We set it in the outskirts of Moscow.
Sure.
And then that way we have the outskirts, we have the subways, we have the city fighting.
Yeah. A lot of environment.
Yeah. We can really play it up. Ooh. Yeah. There we go. That's my pitch. It's an obscure game, but would make an awesome movie.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's funny because Diablo, because I said very specifically I want a character focus, that's why you asked me, like, did you have any ideas in mind? Which I didn't, but I gave a couple names. And since then, the stuff we've pitched has all been, like, not as character focused, so I haven't had reason to think about, like, who would be cast for anything. And so I'm sitting here thinking, like, all right, if I'm doing a Resistance film, I don't necessarily want, like, any individual performance to stand out, but I do think camaraderie between like four or five people in the squad. This is the delivery.
Well, again, the heart of this movie is really going to be set on, you like these characters, you're rooting for these characters, one by one they're dying. Oh, are they going to make it out? Are they going to be able to get word out that this is coming? Oh shit, they aren't. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I realize almost like two out of three of my movies have downer endings.
Let's see, of mine, Bioshock Rapture would have a up ending, actually. Diablo would have an ambiguous ending.
We're hitting the spectrum.
Hmm. Okay. I don't have any other... It's been so long since I played Resistance that I don't... Like, again, I played it with the... And we have to have a reference somewhere to... just for me and you, right? Because there's a joke we had where if you're player two, you are a character that is not the main character, is very designed differently, but who never gets to say or take part in anything.
Or be referenced.
So we had a joke between us that he's not real, and he's Nathan Hale's hallucination to cope with the situation he's in.
Oh, that's an easy one to write in. We have that at some point No, we just have a character that we don't reveal is not there until like the third act.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to have that. Just for me and you. No.
That works great. As like the last third act twist is the guy's like, well, at least you can get out. And then when he's bleeding out and he blinks and the guy's flickering out of existence and we realize he was a hallucination the whole time.
Yeah, you have to do clever editing and clever filming so that that character is never referenced by any of the other characters, is never talked to, and it never does anything that would impact them necessarily. Yeah. But you don't draw attention to it. You just got to be careful about it.
And I wish I could have thought of a director. Like, I went and looked for the director. I looked at the director of Overlord. He hasn't exactly done great stuff since. Robert Rodriguez could be fun. He'd have the spirit I'm going for this.
Robert Rodriguez would make it a fun movie, but he wouldn't make it the kind of good movie.
Yeah, it's a bit too grindhousey, but you get what I'm looking for in a director.
Yeah, I'm unsure. I don't know. I didn't think about is there any movies besides Overlord you think to compare it to? My first thought was like Saving Private Ryan. Not quite, but I'm not gonna put Spielberg on this.
No. Oh. See, this is the movie I want more people to make. Oh, fuck. Damn it. Who is the guy that did Rogue One?
I don't know. I know. I knew you were thinking Rogue One when you started describing the ending. Let's see.
I just know that director. He just did...
Gareth Edwards.
Gareth Edwards, I think, would be good on this.
Yeah, I know. He's done plenty of other stuff, too.
He just did The Creator.
Monsters.
Oh, Monsters was bad, though.
Godzilla 2014. I don't know a lot of these films. Okay.
But no, Gareth Edwards, again, he showed what he could do in The Creator in getting a lot from a little. Hmm. Like budget-wise and effects returns. That's okay. That's right here. That can work.
All right. Okay. Well, for my final movie, I was sitting here, and this is actually the first movie I thought of. And remember, I said that when I sat down to do this, to write down my notes, I was trying not to think of game first. I was trying to think of director first and directors that I like. So one of the first things that came to mind is Guy Ritchie. I love Guy Ritchie. I love a lot of his films. I don't love all his films, but the things I like...
gangster films.
Exactly. I like his gangster films. I like when he deals with like underbellies of crime, different people's stories coming together in one place. And so then I was thinking, like, okay, what kind of game would be perfect for Guy Ritchie? And the first obvious thought was Grand Theft Auto, but I immediately shot that down because there's basically a shitload of movies that are essentially Grand Theft Auto movies. Yeah. Grand Theft Auto itself is pulling from a whole, like, library of different films.
Yeah, so, we're getting to the John Carpenter issue. It's going to feel too much like every other.
So I don't feel the need to actually make a Grand Theft Auto movie in any way. It basically already exists. But what is something that's a game that is like Grand Theft Auto, that has the same kind of feeling for how it plays, but is something that we haven't seen a whole lot of in actual film? I'm not going to say never, because I could think of at least a couple films that do this, but I thought of Bully.
See, that's going to be a fun callback for a generation that remembers that being the biggest deal in gaming.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Bully was essentially Grand Theft Auto if instead of the mafia in a big city, you were a bully kid, like a teenage kid, like 15, 16, something like that, in a private school. But it plays it straight like that. And what I immediately thought is that I've seen this premise in cartoons forever, like Hey Arnold and Recess come to mind, of treating kid situations like adult situations. I've seen it in at least one movie I could think of, which is Brick, which is why my other director I would say could do this is Rian Johnson, who did Brick, and Brick is fucking amazing. I still think Guy Ritchie's the right call, but Rian Johnson's my backup for this. So for anyone who didn't actually play Bully, the narrative is not that important. It's about this kid who gets sent to this private school because of reasons. It's not really important, but he gets in and basically immediately gets picked out by this other kid who is a major asshole. Like, the main kid's name is Jimmy. This other kid's name is Gary. Gary wants to be his friend, it seems like. But his friend in that, like, oh, come on, I know this whole school, and me and you can take over this place kind of way. And by the end of the first act of the game, and thus the first act of the movie, Gary betrays Jimmy to one of the cliques, essentially. And that's another key thing. Bully, as a game and as a movie, it runs on basically 80s logic when it comes to high schools, in that the different, like, groups of students are basically gangs. And that's one of the hooks. If I was pitching this to someone, the hook is, this is a post-apocalypse gang city movie, except it's in a boarding school in the 90s.
I can see it. And I think Guy Ritchie's the choice because it's going to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek about it, because it's going to be treated with deadly seriousness.
Absolutely.
But you can remember the audience is going to look at this like, but they're kids. But the narrative's going to be like, yeah, but this is deadly serious to them.
Yeah, and the theme, this is a straightforward revenge narrative. I don't give a shit about the underlying, like, messages. There probably is a good message here at play about, like, you know, understanding other people or even classism, because this is a private school, but that doesn't really matter. The movies I'm looking to pull from are Brick, Snatch, Kill Bill, The Revenant, and The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, I'm here for it. This is a Guy Ritchie movie. Because
we want, I want Jimmy to come in. I want him to be betrayed by Gary before even the end of the first act. And then a good chunk of the second act is about him trying to get the other cliques on his side so he can get revenge on Gary. Now, the third act is going to go into some different situations that actually bring in the town around it. But the meat of this movie is, okay, I need to get the fucking greasers, mechanics, like the auto shop kids on my side. So what does the head greaser need? Okay, he needs... Like, this is going to be, in some cases, side quest the movie, but it's an excuse. It's just an excuse.
I can see it as the Guy Ritchie, because Guy Ritchie has that great layered narrative.
Yeah, this is...
We're going to go over here and do this thing, which will pay off this thing in the third act, which you will have forgotten about by the time we get around to it.
Yeah, and even think a little Mean Girls, like how Mean Girls dealt with, like, a school setting. But... Yeah, Hey Arnold and Recess, like how they basically create city culture, but inside a school. That is the key fun in this movie. And that's the key word. This movie is meant to be fun. That's why I want it to be a straightforward revenge narrative. And
yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, and because these are all young people, like we can cast people in their, we can do the thing from like fucking, you know, most of Hollywood history and cast like early 20s people, and we can age them up a little bit. So these are like, supposed to be like 16 and 17 year olds that very obviously are not, but they're young enough that we give it a pass. But still, I want mostly unknowns.
Yeah.
Maybe cast like tongue in cheek, like Jason Statham as the principal, because Guy Ritchie likes Jason Statham.
No, but if we're doing it, let's put aside Statham. I want Vinnie Jones.
Sure.
Vinnie Jones as a principal will be fucking hilarious.
I am absolutely on board with that. But my point is that like we cast like one Guy Ritchie nod in a minor support role, but because for the most part, adults are not going to be in this film at all. Like the principal will show up a couple times, but the parents never fucking seen ever. This is supposed to be like these kids' movies, and that's one of the underlying rules. Anyone who's fucking been through high school knows one of the underlying rules of in this kind of situation is you don't bring your parents in because they make it worse.
Yeah, no, Vinnie Jones is the principal because that's something, and he knows what's going on. He gives zero shits. As long as no one's dead, he doesn't have time for it.
Yeah. And we can modify plenty of the elements. Like, one of the key elements of Jimmy as a character is that he is a bully, but he's a bully who is trying to put an end to bullying. So we have a lead character who's basically an asshole, but an asshole who you kind of get behind and understand because you understand where he's coming from. Like, this is not a good kid. Not by any means. But you understand that he's like, well, that kid is way worse and we want to see him suffer.
Yeah, no, this is a Guy Ritchie movie. This is Guy Ritchie going back to his roots, but going, what if I had to cast a whole crop of new young English kids?
Exactly. And original Bully takes place in, I want to say like Maine, so it's American, but I wouldn't mind it being a British private school.
No, because Americans have no concept of private schools. British, though, that's like baked into the culture.
Yeah, and the concepts apply, I think, very well. Again, this is, I think, Guy Ritchie's like jam. It's what he does really well. And weirdly enough, very few of his non-crime movies I like a lot, some of them. But so, yeah, I think, I'm a sucker for having young people seriously in a film do things that are like adult concepts. And not like adult in an R-rated sense, but I just mean like I love young romance, for instance. That's why I like Moonrise Kingdom. And so the idea of like young crime movie where they're talking about things like, you know, spreading the allowance money or smuggling in like, you know, R-rated movies or something in the same way that an older movie would be talking about cocaine or
it would be drug. Since this is the 90s, it's running burned CDs, bootleg band shirts.
Exactly.
Who's got access to Zima?
Yeah, that's what we're, and that's a big part of the fun. And you play it all seriously, just yes. like in Brick, essentially.
I know, it works great. The younger audience is there because they love seeing their world presented so seriously. The older audience is there. It's like, this is a genuine 90s movie, and I love how seriously it's taking the concepts.
Yeah, that is the fun. That's the elevator pitch for this one.
And I'm always here for like the fun anthropology of society keeps recreating itself no matter how many levels down you go. The same patterns keep emerging.
Yes, exactly.
No, I'm here for that.
Anyway, there's our six pitches for some video game movies with specific directors and other specific things that we came up with. We tried to be a little more. Oh, I have one I'm not going to go into, but in my notes, I wrote down Wes Anderson's Psychonauts. And I couldn't take it any further than that, but you know, take that.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, I'm pretty proud of us. I think we pitched some really fun movies that unfortunately we will never see because the world is cruel and cold.
That is true. I do think a BioShock movie will eventually happen just because of like the conversation around it. I don't think a Bully movie will ever happen.
Not enough people remember Bully outside of the conversation.
But we might get tangential things like Brick to it. Diablo, I don't think will ever happen. Not in a live action. I think we'll get an animated movie at some point, though.
Yeah, and it's going to be big and it's going to be bombastic. It'll be fine, but it's not going to. No one but us remembers Resistance Fall of Man, so that's not getting made.
It will never happen. Resistance will. There's no fucking chance it will ever happen, yeah, unfortunately.
Even if we get like the remastered collection, it'll be a fun novelty, but yeah, no. Doom, maybe. If the
Doom will happen. Doom will happen, but in what form is unknown. Like, Doom is inevitable. It will happen. But
yeah.
Dead Space, I don't know. I could see that going either way.
Honestly. Dead Space, again, the John Carpenter conversation keeps happening. People keep talking about taking it on. I think Wright Horror Director finds it. The problem is it's not cheap.
I think also the problem is that Dead Space, the conversation around Dead Space is a little poison because of Dead Space 3. And that's unfortunate to the franchise as it is, but it's a reality you have to understand. Yeah, but
that remake came back and reminded everyone they loved it. But again, the problem is like Dead Space would be expensive.
That is true.
And people don't like horror movies. Producers don't like horror movies that are expensive. Honestly, well, anyway. I think Bully will happen is the most likely to happen under a different title because I don't know. That feels like a really great idea.
Which is too bad because I think Bully is also a perfect name for it. Not only is it about a bully, but if you actually said it in an English school, you know, Bully is a fun, that's an old, anyway, I love the title. Bully was such a fun, like weird thing that existed.
Yeah. If anyone is a movie producer or knows a movie producer that would love to buy the rights to these films, we will happily sign them over.
Because, you know, we totally own them.
Hey, we came up with them. Patent
the
pending.
Pitches. We came up with the pitches, there at least. But it doesn't mean a whole lot.
Listen, anyway. I'll rig up an AI or something to write the scripts. That is a joke. Do not take that seriously. Fuck that shit.
If you're listening to this and you have some pitches that you think are interesting, feel free to share it with us. If you're interested in this, maybe we might do it again. And if you have pitches of your own, maybe we'll share pitches of yours and credit you. Like, I don't know. It's just ideas. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, no, I want to do another one. So if people like this, we might do another one. All right, let's roll into suggestions of the week.
Okay, my suggestion of the week is going to be real quick. I've been super into Tekken 8 for all 2 months it's been out. And my favorite person on YouTube that will teach you how to start getting better at Tekken 8 is a guy named FeedyX. Professional Tekken 7 player, and he's a real fun, kind of easy guy. Well, it's really funny because actually his videos that are all about like for beginners are super beginner friendly and they're super like comfy. He's real nice, he's real chill. Then you go watch his streams and he's got a lot more goblin energy, which is kind of why I love him. He's great. Anyway, FeedyX, real good YouTuber, especially if you're trying to get into Tekken.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a small video game I don't know how many people heard about. I'm playing a lot recently. That's Baldur's Gate 3. I don't feel like I need to explain this because it dominated the internet for the first, what, 3-4 months of its existence?
Well, as someone who's been playing Baldur's Gate 3 since it was in early access, it's actually a lot crazier than you probably realize it is. And you're pretty late to the party
I'm very late to the party. But yeah, I came to it. I was hesitant because, as you may or may not know, I'm not the biggest D&D ephemera fan, is the best way I can think to describe that.
Which, well, what's funny is that Ulrich's relationship with it is actually complicated because he is a fan of books set in the world, and now he's a fan of a game that is very much in the essence of D&D. He's had some bad experiences trying to play the actual game, and had some bad experiences with the culture around the game. Yeah. So it's ups and downs.
So this proved a great example. I get all that D&D goodness. I do love a good role-playing game, and I got it in a game where the people that pissed me off like that, I could just kill and then loot their bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still grinding through it. I bounced back and forth. I'm either playing Helldivers or Baldur's Gate, depending on how social I'm feeling.
Well, I will say, Ulrich, if you ever want to start a campaign with me in Baldur's Gate, because it's got up to 4-player co-op, I'd probably be down.
Listen, I've got Helldivers if I want to talk to you outside the podcast. Why do I want
you in Baldur's Gate? I'm just putting it out there. You didn't have to step on it. You don't have to take it, but it's there.
Again, we've established. I can't just kill you. I could kill you and steal all your shit. We should play together. All right. Anyways, thank you for listening. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, do all the things, because now more than ever, we really, really need people to do that, because algorithms don't work. And the more we learn about them, the more we learn how much they do not.
Plus, we lost our primary sharing and connecting with other people website to Nazis.
Hate when that happens.
Yeah. But hey, whatever platform you're currently listening to this on, thank you for doing that. If there's another platform that you think would be good for us or good for you or good for the situation, I don't know, and we're not on it currently, then tell us about it, because we're not on it either because we don't know it or because it's got a financial restriction that we can't fill. So if that second one isn't true, then tell us about it and we'll see what we can do.
As always, this has been Lord Commander Ulrich.
And his shield brother, Axel Wright.
Be sure to tune in next time. And as always, stay honorable.